It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good Friday morning, everyone. This has been a pretty high drama week in economic news and a week with many moving parts. Just this morning, if you haven't heard yet, the November jobs numbers came out and break out the smiley face emojis. They showed a robust 263,000 new jobs added in the United States last month, more than many economists expected. But break out the frowny face emojis. The jobs report immediately made Wall Street futures drop this morning because so many new jobs means all those interest rate hikes from the Federal Reserve Board may not be enough to slow inflation, right? But wait, didn't the inflation report that came out this week for October show some signs of slowing, and Fed Chair Jerome Powell said something about slowing the interest rate hikes that sent Wall Street on a big rally the other day? Yep, that happened too. And then there's the crypto meltdown. Break out the wide-eyed OMG, I am totally effed emoji if you're heavily invested in the super currencies of the future, but you can click on the whew, that's a relief emoji if your money is in regular banks. Here's Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
The good piece of an explosion like we saw is that it hasn't spilled over to the banking sector. Banking regulators have been very careful
you don't think that,
about crypto.
There's no Lehman moment here for you.
It's a Lehman moment within crypto, and crypto is big enough that you've had substantial harm of investors, right, and particularly people who aren't very well informed, right, about the risk that they're undertaking. And that's right, that's a very bad thing.
But a real Lehman moment, that reference was to 2008, the beginning of the financial crisis, when the company Lehman Brothers melted down, and that started the whole American economy into a free fall, or it continued it, really, and was seen as a trigger point. So Treasury Secretary Yellen there in a New York Times interview this week. And finally, really big, too, took us a couple of minutes to even get to this, there's the railroad strike that President Biden and Congress stopped in its tracks, or with the railroad strike, do you say, stopped on its tracks yesterday, with all the implications it could have had for Christmas season supply chain shocks and other side effects. Though our pro-labor president admitted he couldn't get the paid sick leave provision he wanted in the bill.
We're going to avoid the rail strike, keep the rails running, keep things moving. And I'm going to go back and we're going to get paid leave, not just for rail workers, but for all workers.
Wait, workers in real unionized jobs, like with the railroads, don't get sick days? So let's try to make sense of all this with Emily Stewart, who covers business and economics for Vox. Among her recent articles are ones called FTX is over, is crypto too? What aren't we doing to fix inflation? And her latest, a holiday reminder to not be a rude doofus. Emily, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And I got to start with your latest article, because that's the really important thing. A holiday reminder not to be a rude doofus. Do people become, you know, rude doofuses? I guess that's the way we can say it on the radio. A lot this time of year?
That is the way we can say it on the radio. And the answer is, I mean, yes, obviously. The holidays are a stressful time always. I think, you know, what you were getting at a little bit in this intro is that the economy has been really stressful for the past several years, and you combine those together. And it's a time of year when people kind of have the propensity to get a little bit upset over things that maybe in the grand scheme of things are not that big of a deal, and or yell at a customer service agent who isn't really in control of the situation. Ultimately, if your flight's delayed and you're yelling at the gate agent, you know, that person can't control the delays or the weather. And I talked to a lot of retail workers and customer service workers, and this one comes up more than you'd think, to be honest.
You're charging me $389 for this? It said on the shelf $379. Yeah. Are there rude doofus data? Like showing this has gotten worse among shoppers since the pandemic started? Like, we know rude doofus driving has gotten worse.
Right. I mean, we definitely hear it anecdotally. And I think over the past few years, you have seen incidences of, for example, flight attendants saying that they face more abusive customers or flyers, I guess, in this case. So it does start to show up a little bit in the data. And even, like I said, anecdotally talking to people, I'm always really surprised how often workers say, like, hey, would you just, like, please remind people to be nice because I'm doing my best here. And that matters.
So I'm glad we said that out loud. We're having fun with it. But seriously, folks, remember when you're stressed, shopping, or really anywhere else, be nice to that person who's doing their job or be nice to that person who's just the next shopper in line. All right, next rude doofus topic. And honestly, this was not the framing I thought we would have for the railroad workers' labor dispute. But Emily, what kind of rude doofus employer doesn't offer sick days in 2022?
I mean, this is a tough one. This is one where, you know, railroad workers did kind of come out on the losing end here. And this is a really a story of how railroads over the past several years have run on this sort of precision cycle where everything is super tight. The freight is super tight. So there are as few workers as possible. Everything is super, super optimized. So what does that mean? That means that it's a really, really big problem if somebody calls out sick. And this is really the result of corporations sort of trying to squeeze as much out of workers as possible, out of their operations as possible to ultimately make more money. And it is, I think, shocking to think about the idea that even 7 paid sick days is not happening. It's something that I think is much more reflective of our broader economic system that you would think in jobs like these, as you said, unionized, good union jobs that are, you know, well paid, but that you can't be sick for a day and be paid for it. You could be even fired for that. That's really kind of baffling.
So listeners, anyone can call on this economy news segment that we're doing with Emily Stewart from Vox, but we're especially interested in two groups of you. First, anyone who doesn't get sick days at your full-time job, all right? Maybe if you're a gig worker, it's in another category, maybe it's a more complicated conversation, but anyone who doesn't get sick days at your full-time job, what does that lead you to do? What kind of risks does that lead you to take for yourself or for others or deprivations? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And kind of way on the other side of that, anyone who has lost money in the crypto collapse, FTX or the hedge fund Alameda or any other crypto losses, and do you think this should be the end of cryptocurrency? 212-433-WNYC. For people who don't get sick days at your full-time job or anyone who lost money in the crypto collapse so far, 212-433-9692 or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Tell us a story or ask a question of Emily Stewart from Vox. You can call on the other economy stories that we're talking about as well, inflation, the jobs numbers, all of that. But definitely, I think it would be great for other listeners to hear your stories of how you compensate if you don't get sick days at your full-time job. And also, you know, crypto losers, you probably need a little therapy right now. So we can ask you how you feel. 212-433-9692. The politics, Emily, of the railroad strike in Washington, they had the votes in Congress, meaning a House majority plus 60 in the Senate, to block a strike, but not to impose a sick day provision in the contract. Was it all Republicans who voted for one but not the other?
So there were 6 Republicans who ultimately did vote on the sick day side, but also Joe Manchin did not vote to approve the paid sick leave, the Democrat from West Virginia. So I think once again, we are seeing Joe Manchin doing Joe Manchin and doing what he wants to do and breaking with the Democrats.
Right. But in this case, even if he voted with the Democrats, that wouldn't have passed the bill, right? Because the sick days provision, because they needed the 60. We played that clip of Biden saying he hopes this restarts the national paid leave debate. that, in fairness to him, he was trying to have last year with his Build Back Better bill that included a national paid family leave requirement. But the Republicans and Joe Manchin killed it in the Senate. I've actually asked many times on the show, Emily, and I'm curious to get your take. Why don't they break out a standalone paid sick and family leave bill? There was so much other stuff in Build Back Better that people could try to shoot holes in for one reason or another. But I think a standalone paid leave bill would be wildly popular across party lines. But I guess there are reasons. Do you follow the politics of that at all?
And to be clear, I'm not a congressional reporter, so this is not quite my arena. It does seem, I mean, my general sense, and I've actually been working on a separate story on unemployment insurance, which is a little bit different, but I think that there is just kind of a sense with a lot of the momentum that came out of the pandemic that we saw that, oh, these social programs are really important. Like, look what we can do. Look how great it would be if people had more assistance. Or, hey, it's a really bad idea if people go to work sick, for example. A lot of that momentum has really died, and it's not super clear why. Sometimes, in a certain sense, we kind of see the big problem. After a while, we just kind of tend to move on and forget. And I sometimes wonder if that's just kind of part of it, that it's just no longer on the top of the list of priorities at this point, especially with inflation sort of sucking the air out of the room in terms of the economic conversation right now.
Yeah. So business leaders say, hey, wait, we're going to lose businesses. Business profits are going to slow down. Economic growth is going to slow down if we have these requirements from government for paid leave. But they're bending over backwards at the Fed to make the economy slow down in ways that are causing much more pain. Maybe paid leave would be better than higher interest rates, but what do I know? But Biden is getting a lot of credit, we should say, for being kind of the grown-up in the room and acting against his union base in this case, accepting the no sick leave compromise because there was a national imperative not to have a strike. And I wonder if you could explain that part to us. Why is that seen as so dire, a railroad strike, all kinds of union strike at different times, and the country doesn't grind to a halt?
Right. I mean, I think sometimes people kind of don't think about the importance of the railroad, what a big part it plays in our economy, that this would really have affected even your drinking water, right? Like being able to transport chemicals from parts of the country to different parts of the country to purify drinking water. This would have been a huge catastrophe economically. I think one estimate was that it would be $2 billion a day. I remember reporting on this a little bit in the fall and asking someone, well, you know, what if trucks could just kind of replace the trains? And he said basically 400 trucks would be needed to replace like a single train. And he said, you know, do you think anybody has 400 trucks sitting around? So this would have been really bad. And again, in a situation where we are already facing some economic complications, it would have made inflation worse. Nobody wants to deal with this heading into the holidays. I think kind of to a certain extent, the president and Congress didn't have a huge amount of choice here. Of course, I guess on the labor side, they tell you the reason that they were threatening a strike is that this is the moment that they had a lot of leverage. But ultimately, Congress stepped in, President Biden stepped in, because what they don't want to happen, which is kind of what started to happen in September, is that companies start to plan for a strike anyway. So even if they'd gotten to, what was it, December 9th, and there wasn't a strike or whatever had happened, things start to slow down on December 6th, December 7th, because if you're sending a train from New Hampshire to California, you don't want it stuck in the middle of Kansas on a Wednesday.
You don't want it stuck in Ames, Iowa, which is where our first caller is calling from. Mike in Ames, Iowa. Iowa, the state that where the presidential primaries used to start. That's another story from the last day, folks. I don't know if you've heard. President Biden and the Democrats want to make South Carolina the first primary state now rather than Iowa. We'll do that on Monday's show. But Mike and Ames, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Well, hi, Brian. A longtime listener, first-time caller. Hey, my question is related to general time off for the rail workers. I've been a registered nurse for 38 years now. I technically don't get paid, or excuse me, paid sick leave. I get what we just call PTO, paid time off, which is a one bank. You use it for sick time. You use it for vacation time or whenever you need time off. So.
And- And was that okay? Was that okay? Like, if there's enough PTO and you can distribute it for vacation or for sick or whatever, then maybe that's okay if there are enough days in that bank. Is that your experience?
It is. And what they do offer, my employer also does offer, is long and short-term disability. So technically, if you're going to be off for greater than 5 days sick, you can tap into the either short or long-term disability option, which does pay up, I believe it's about 66% of your pay. And then you would just subsidize the rest of that with any of your remaining paid right. time off. So I'm just wondering if it's just a little bit misleading saying that they just don't get any sick leave.
Well, that's a really fair question, Mike. Thank you for raising it, and please call us again. Emily, what about that? Are we missing an important point here in the railroad contract conversation? If there are enough PTO days, personal time off days, like the caller is describing, that can be applied to sickness, be applied to vacation, whatever?
I mean, they do have access to paid leave for long-term illnesses. I think that the big question here and what the unions will tell you here is that you don't always plan to be sick ahead of time, right? You don't always plan for this. And maybe you don't want to take a vacation day. Or in this sort of situation, you can't. We've heard stories of people not getting checked out and becoming very ill. You get paid a lot or you do have a vacation, but you don't plan to get sick. You don't plan for your child to get sick a lot of the time. And I think that's sort of where, at least on the union side, they would say, like, hey, you sometimes wake up in the morning and you have strep throat or COVID or whatever, and you didn't know yesterday you were going to have it.
Yeah. But I guess what he's raising here is if there are enough total days in the bank, and I don't know what the number is in the railroad union's contract that was, imposed by Congress and the president yesterday. I don't know if you know. But let's say for a lot of people, maybe you get 2 weeks of vacation, so that's 10 paid vacation days, and you get 1 week of sick leave, 5 paid sick days. But instead, a company gives you 15 PTO days that you can distribute any way you want. So maybe you don't get sick at all that year, but you want to take an extra week of vacation, and you can use it that way. So again, I don't know what's in the railroad contract in terms of PTO, but maybe that's a piece of it. Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I'm not exactly sure where they landed on all of the PTO on this, and I don't want to make things up. I think just, like, at least my understanding, especially from like December or September talking to workers, was that, like, even people calling in sick one day again, and it was just whatever reason, maybe you wanted a personal day, like, you could really get fired, you could lose your job. Like, it's not allowed. And again, like, there are just things that come up sometimes where a vacation day is not going to cut it for these people, at least on the union side, that's what they'll tell you.
Yeah, interesting. And I guess if you have to give notice before using your PTO days, then obviously, like you say, you wake up and you're sick, your kid is sick, maybe I have COVID, maybe I don't, I guess I have to go to work, haha, hello everybody else at work. So that's part of it. Brian in D.C., you're on WNYC. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually getting a master's degree in a program called Health in the Public Interest at Georgetown University, and I own a restaurant in New York City. And so I recently wrote a paper on the effects of paid sick leave, specifically on the restaurant industry, but overall. And the studies from New York City after it passed paid sick leave and San Francisco and Washington State show overwhelming that it has really beneficial effects on employees and workers and almost no negative effects on businesses or the economy. There's not a real economic argument for why businesses should not be offering paid sick leave. It leaves their employees healthier, and it takes a burden off of the healthcare system by people going to the doctor instead of going to the emergency room, things like that. And the study of the New York paid sick leave program is called No Big Deal, The Impact of Paid Sick Leave. It really is beneficial for everyone and doesn't put much of a cost on businesses.
That's really interesting. And coming from you as a restaurant owner, that's an interesting combination of things you're doing, Brian, studying policy at Georgetown while you own a restaurant in New York. What's the career path? What do you see yourself doing when you get out of school?
Well, I'm in the process of selling the restaurant. I am making a complete 180-degree pivot that started, obviously, during COVID. And getting on in years, so it's time to get out of the restaurant business, stop being awake until 2 in the morning, and I'm looking for work in healthcare policy. I want to, you know, I have the small goal of fixing the American healthcare system.
good for you, really, seriously.
I know you have a public health master's, don't you?
I do, actually, yeah. So keep us posted on your progress, Brian, okay? We're depending on you now to fix the healthcare system after this call. Brian, thank you very much. Pretty interesting. Emily, right?
Yeah, I was going to say I wrote down the name of that paper. I will take a look at it. I think it's a reminder to, you know, think that employers a lot of the time are going to kick and scream about a lot of things that and say it's bad for the economy, and maybe that those are sorts of statements that we should take with a grain of salt sometimes.
All right. We're going to take a short break that we have to take, and then we'll continue in a minute, and we'll go on to this morning's jobs report, this week's intriguing inflation report, and we'll play a few clips of FTX's Sam Bankman-Fried, who gave him some courage points, if nothing else, I guess. He did sit for a couple of interviews about having broken crypto. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue to talk about a lot of economy news this week with Emily Stewart, who covers business and economics for Vox. We're going to go on to some other topics than the ones we were talking about in the A, but Charlie in Comac is calling in with, he thinks, the number of PTO days that they get in the railway workers' contract, which we didn't know a few minutes ago. So, Charlie, what are you seeing?
Okay. Well, according to the American Association of Railways, the organization that represents the railroads, AAR.org, paid time off for railway workers varies between 25 and 39 days, depending upon seniority.
So that would be really interesting if you've got it right. And, you know, we can't take a caller's number as like as if it came from Emily in her Vox article. But if true, 25 to 39 days, depending on seniority, 25 days of PTO, if they can apply them reasonably, like in the scenario you were describing before, if you wake up sick one day, can you apply it at the moment? That's actually not bad. I don't know. Maybe there is a piece of this story that we're missing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open definitely to hear, you know, I mean, I think that that is exactly what the railroad companies, you know, would tell you. They do have plenty of time. I think just again, like I said before, from the unions, what they say is that the problem is facing discipline in the event that it's really unexpected.
Right, right. All right. This morning's jobs report for November. Lots of new jobs in America last month, plus 263,000. But I forget, Emily, is that good or bad right now?
That's like the million-dollar question, right? So a normal person looks at this, thinks this is great, right? 263,000 jobs, unemployment rate 3.7%. We're seeing wage growth. On its face, good. The problem is that we have a Federal Reserve right now that is trying to slow down the economy by raising interest rates and specifically trying to slow down jobs and employment and slow down wage growth. So if you are the Fed chair, Jay Powell, waking up this morning, looking at that number, you're not feeling great about it. And he said a couple of days ago, listen, we are aware that we could over tighten on interest rates, that the Fed has said in previous statements, you know, hey, we're aware that some of our actions might lag in terms of taking effect on the labor market. And we're not seeing that effect super heavily yet. I mean, you saw the markets this morning react, and I haven't looked at what the markets are doing in about an hour, but the markets weren't happy about this because they take this as a sign that the Fed is going to continue to be aggressive in raising interest rates and trying to cool the economy down. And that leads to worry that the Fed will push the country into a recession. You know, it's not the best that for the economy to, quote unquote, get better. That means people losing their jobs.
Yeah, the Dow is down around 220 as of a minute ago. I just looked it up. So that's on the basis of this news. There's an interesting. Oh, by the way, callers, we're done with the paid time off part of the call in. So now we're looking for that other group of you that I mentioned at the beginning. So if you're calling to talk about paid time off or sick days, we're done with that. Now we're looking for people who have lost money by investing in crypto. So we want to hear some of your story. Do you feel like you were deceived? Do you feel like you deceived yourself? Or any question you want to ask Emily Stewart, who covers economics for Vox, about that, as we'll get to that piece of it in a couple of minutes. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you have lost money as an investor in FTX or anything else in the crypto world, 212-433-9692. Help us report that story. But on the interest rate hikes, Emily, there's an interesting coalition of dissent that ranges from Bernie Sanders to Elon Musk, let's say, saying that the Fed's interest rates hikes are making things worse, not better. Can you explain that argument and why the Fed thinks it's wrong?
I mean, I think there's a general dissonance, just even for regular people, to say, wait a minute, like the Fed making the economy worse somehow fixes it, right? If you're a business, this means it's more expensive to borrow. It means you're not going to hire as much. It means you're not going to invest as much in your business. If you were a Bernie Sanders, if you're a worker, you sit around and think, wait, like it's a good thing that I keep my job, right? And that my wages go up. I think this is a tough, you know, it's tricky. And I never know where I fall in. And that's not really my job to know where I fall on it. But it is really tough to swallow, I think. And you do have a lot of people looking at this now and saying, wait. So the way that we fix inflation is by kicking people out of jobs and making the economy worse. I think, you know, I talked to one economist recently who said, you know, as much as wages going up is nice, or there are a bunch of job openings, right? He said, you can't eat a job opening. So if prices are getting to the point that you can't afford your day-to-day life, that's obviously something that we want to get a handle on.
Yeah. And I mentioned in the intro your recent article, which I really liked, which had the headline something like, "What Aren't We Doing to Fix Inflation?" And I liked how you brought together various people from left and right politically to talk about things other than or even in addition to raising interests, interest rates that could be done. And I guess especially as an alternative because of the harm that raising interest rates does. So what are some of the things? Were there any consensus items that came out of that?
I mean, there was not a lot of consensus. I mean, to a certain extent, a lot of people said, you know, we do have to be a little bit patient here. You know, we've heard a lot of chatter from progressives about taking a look at corporate profits and seeing what can be done there. It's not clear how much corporate profits are contributing to inflation, but it's worth taking a look at for sure. Companies are making a lot of money. On the right, I had a couple of people mention tariffs and trade, saying, hey, what if we cut some tariffs? And I did ask one progressive economist about it, and he said, listen, like, is taking a look at tariffs my first choice? No, but like maybe it would help around the margins, fine. And I think overall, the consensus that I got from the group is that there isn't one weird trick to fix inflation, right? If there were, Joe Biden would have done it, Congress would have done it, Jay Powell would have done it. But there are things that we can do along the margins. The question is how effective they will be, whether or not there is really appetite to do them. But it's definitely, it should be, if anything, I think the consensus was a problem that doesn't just fall to the Fed. And going forward, if we think this will be a problem again, it's a good moment to talk about what other solutions could look like.
Yeah. I haven't seen a story yet, and I wonder if it's real or it's not real, about older Americans, you know, usually much older, who are retired and don't want to be in the stock market anymore because if there's a big downturn, you know, they may not be around to wait until the market rebounds, and are in old-fashioned FDIC-insured bank accounts that for so many years now have been paying like zero interest. And now you can get accounts that are 3%, even 4% interest, you know, on a regular FDIC-insured bank account. And I guess if there's a demographic who that really benefits, it's like people over 80, but they were really getting hit by all these zero interest rate years, which were meant to goose the economy. So I don't know. Is there a story there that we're missing?
I mean, there might be a story there. I think the issue is that if inflation is at 6, 7, 8%, what is that 3% getting you, right?
Right.
That's the tough one there. And it is, you know, it's a hard situation. I think nobody's super happy about this. But at the same time, you know, Social Security is obviously going up with inflation as well. So, you know, that might be a story that I should look into.
Right. Yeah. That's, well, and that's another whole segment that we did, actually, and I'm not going to go down that spur again too much right here. But Social Security does have that consumer price index provision that pushes it up with inflation. And when we talk about the labor market, well, what about all these other jobs where your raises, if you even get raises, don't match inflation? And, you know, it's a an opportunity for some companies to pocket additional profits if they raise prices a little bit more than the actual inflation rate, because maybe nobody will notice, but they don't pass it on. So, okay, that's another show.
Right.
Listeners, I know there are people out there who've invested in cryptocurrencies and lost money. Where are you? Nobody's calling to admit it. Are you too embarrassed? Come on. Sam Bankman-Fried sat for an interview with the New York Times this week. So call up and tell us your crypto story. I know you're there. And what would you like to see done? How about regulation? Or do you go, oh, not regulation, that's going to make it worse? 212-433-WNYC. Maybe I'm asking the wrong question. Maybe it's most of you who are invested in crypto are still making money, so call up and tell us your story. I don't think that's right, but 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, with Emily Stewart, who covers business and economics for Vox. 212-433-9692. If you've invested anything in crypto, call up and tell us your story at this weird and kind of emergency moment for that fledgling industry. And let's talk about it. I think meltdown is the right word. And the centerpiece of it right now, the company FTX, led by 30-year-old billionaire, or now maybe former billionaire, I'm not sure, Sam Bankman-Fried. And here is Fried in that New York Times interview this week, not meaning to be funny, but getting a laugh.
I mean, look, I've had a bad month. This has not been a fun month for me, but that's not what matters here. Like, what matters here is the millions of customers. What matters here is all the stakeholders in FTX who got hurt, and trying to do everything I can to help them out.
So, Emily, assume most of our listeners are very intelligent but are still relatively uninformed about cryptocurrencies. What happened here, and who besides Sam Bankman-Fried lost a lot of money?
I think we're still figuring out what happened, but the long and short of it is FTX is a crypto exchange that you may not know anybody who's used because they weren't super active in the US, but you've probably seen ads for, right? So the Larry David ad in the Super Bowl. And the CEO of the exchange, Sam Bankman-Fried, has sort of positioned himself as the golden boy of crypto. At the beginning of the month, they basically went under. It's not entirely clear why yet, though it certainly looks like what happened was that some of the customer funds that were being given to FTX by people wanting to trade on their platform were actually being funneled to a separate fund that Bankman-Fried owns, says he did not run, called Alameda. And they lost the money. Money's gone. Nobody knows where it is. I think this is, you know, so who's hurt by this? Obviously, Sam Bankman-Fried, who, to be clear, at least said he's no longer a billionaire. That is probably very much the case. He says he has like $100,000 left. But the real, you know, obviously people who are hurt here are the venture capitalists who invested in him, which include, you know, a lot of VCs, but also pension funds. But what he gets at here is right to the extent that this is his fault, but that a lot of customers have lost a lot of money here. So basically, when you have money on a crypto exchange, crypto, it's not actually your coins that you have. When you leave them on the exchange, the price can go up and down, but also if the exchange goes under or something happens, your coins can kind of go poof, they can disappear. And so a lot of people had money on these exchanges in the United States, but more importantly, around the world on FTX, and that they can't get the money out. And I know you've been asking for crypto stories. I will full
We're
disclosure
getting them
here.
Now, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, but go ahead.
Say that years ago, I had money in a crypto exchange, $100, and the exchange that I had $100 on was shut down by the Department of Justice, and I will never see my own coins. So This happens more often than you think in crypto.
Yeah, and your recent article on this is called FTX is Over. Is Crypto Too? So is crypto over?
I mean, crypto, at this point, I think anybody who says this is the death knell has not experienced the multiple boom and bust cycles of the arena. Lots of things have happened. I mean, crypto has survived through plenty of scandals and drama. And people in the industry will tell you, this is the moment to build. This is the moment that we're going to come back and do the thing that actually makes sense. So we'll see.
Let's take a phone call. See, all people need is a little encouragement. Alan in Long Island City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Brian. I don't know if I should give the analogy that I just gave to the screener, but I would say this. There was a long time ago where people learned about the invention of the zero in India. And it spread west, and it replaced the old numerical systems. It was a good idea. Nobody, though, went out of their way to make a whole scheme of now, be bold in the future and buy zeros. It's like it was just a technique. Bitcoin's a technique. It's a protocol. It was a good idea. But it's too small to run the whole world economy itself, so you need some outside infrastructure. And Ethereum was designed for that, and that's all well and good. But the sewer of perverts that came out to grab money is beyond insanity. And the first rule of this game, which I learned, I mean, I didn't take it up until 2017, was not your keys, not your Bitcoin. If you take delivery of merchandise and put it in your pocket securely, then nobody can go back to the store and steal what was yours. It's in your pocket. How did these people who were supposed to know better buy all this stuff that they didn't even understand and not even put it in their own wallet?
You mean they didn't take their profits out when it went way up, you're saying, right?
No. I still have my Bitcoin, but it's in my wallet. I have a ledger.
I see. Digital wallet. You can sequester it there. Alan, thank you very much. Any thought about that call, Emily?
I mean, that is the thing. When your money is not... Best practices with crypto, Bitcoin, whatever it is to put it in a cold wallet, meaning it's not attached to the internet. And that is correct. I think that the issue here is, A, people did not realize, like people just don't realize that this is the case with exchanges and with crypto in general, that like the money, like unless it is, as your caller said, your keys, your coin, it can disappear. I think people don't realize this. I think I will also say, like in defense of a lot of you know, the people who did lose money in this, Sam Bankman-Fried did, and FTX did say that they were super safe. And it's also a little bit complicated to manage your own crypto. And we've also heard tons of stories of people who had Bitcoin or whatever on some hard drive, whoops, the hard drive is gone, or they lost the keys and they lost some money. So it's complicated. It's a risky investment, full stop.
Yeah, I guess it's why I've seen a nickname springing up for Bitcoin, S coin, rhymes with bit. And Ramona in Brooklyn is going to be our last caller. One more crypto investor. Hi, Ramona. Thanks for calling in. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a crypto investor, and I have both gained and lost money, but I haven't lost faith in investing. I think that there is need, however, for regulation, because the lack of regulation will expose everyone to any form of let's say greed, or any problems that we're seeing happening now with this current crypto crisis, with this
FTX.
I can't remember. FTX. Yes, I think the lack of regulation will lead to this happening over and over again, and you can help the other cryptocurrencies by having some form of regulation. I think that's the crux of it. You need some sort of checks and balances moving forward.
Ramona, thank you very much. So, Emily, make this your last thought. What are a major proposal or two on the table for how to regulate the crypto market that would protect it, you know, not from gains and losses, because these are investments, but from some kind of unconscionable meltdown, especially if there's any fraud or other shenanigans involved?
I mean, I will say that up until a month ago, a lot of regulators and lawmakers were listening to Sam Bankman-Fried about this. So we should be a little bit careful. I really do think that regulators at this point, there's always this, like, we should do something. But to be honest here, regulators don't have the strongest handle on this. We don't know if the SEC is in charge of this, the CFTC is in charge of it. At the same time, I've talked to some experts in this who say, hey, if we regulate crypto as something special, that would also allow it to get further into the financial system. And again, this is an expert's opinion, not mine. But one of the, I guess, silver linings of this whole meltdown is that, as Secretary Yellen said at the top of this, is that it didn't infect the broader financial ecosystem. Right. You can see a world where if it really does get more entrenched and there is an FTX 2.0, it does hurt people who are not investing in crypto at all.
Yeah. Wow. Remember Lehman Brothers? Like, and the whole conversation about whether they should bail out Wall Street in order to save Main Street, because mm-hmm. there were so many trickle-down effects of the financial crisis in the banking sector. So it was reassuring to hear Janet Yellen say in that clip, in her New York Times interview this week, that this does not seem to be infecting the financial system as a whole. So at mm-hmm. least there's that. All right, Emily Stewart, who covers business and economics for Vox, great job. Thanks for coming on and talking through so many things. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. Have a great day.